In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Brian Shackman, John Senecal here for episode 140. We're super grateful to Ray Fagnan, who's the Northeast Regional Scout for the Boston Red Sox. And, I mean, we could talk to you for days. You should write a book or do something. That maybe you should have a podcast, because I think the stories are endless, and we're super grateful for the time. What I wanted to start with in episode 140 is your scouting career. We talked about in the last episode about what's changed, what hasn't changed, you know, sort of pre-Moneyball and post-Moneyball. But there aren't many, I mean, some scouts stay in the job forever. And I sort of have two questions, like, were you ever interested in any other part of the game? Did you ever have opportunities to do front office or manage, get on the bench? And like, why, if you did, then why did you not do it?
When I started, I had my timetable. You know, I say 5 years, I'd be scouting director, I'd love to be GM one day. But then you get married, you have kids, life and your priority changes. You know, nothing outside of my job has ever taken away from my job. I've always been able to do my job, but I could find ways to watch my son's Little League games. Or I remember driving back from Rochester to see my son's first T-ball practice and turning around, going right back to Rochester. But
well, that's a brutal drive.
I was happy to do it. So it's, and again, even though
it was a lifestyle choice. Is that what you're saying?
Lifestyle choice. Yep. Like a lot of driving. I remember when the boys were born, a lot of, I've commuted Fayetteville, North Carolina before, so I get back, or, you know, after my first son was born, you know, the doing my pro coverage, I had the Reading Phillies for a 7-game series. And I remember, you know, after the noon feeding, driving there, seeing the game, coming home and, you know, being there to help in the middle of the night, take care.
But in one day.
It was 7 days in a row, but it's absolute lifestyle choice. And the job is really has really evolved where, you know, when I started, you know, procedurally, administratively, it was really easy. But now there's just so much to do. 365 days a year. Like we're
expecting. So you had opportunity. You could have gone to single A and been a bench coach.
I never pursued a player development option where ultimately I think, like my wife always says, that's where your passion is. That's something you probably should, you know, looked into. Had I pursued it, I probably could have, but that's a little different because that you're simply, you leave for spring training in
you're
March,
gone.
You're gone. I could make my own schedule. Again, it involves sometimes, you know, a round trip, maybe a commuter trip to Fayetteville, North Carolina, but I could do that. But I knew I wanted to stay in the game. And like I said, it has really evolved. And my best piece of scouting, unequivocally, without question, was signing my wife, if you will. You know, she's got a career choice. She's been so supportive of my career on so many different levels. But she has a fantastic position.
So 30 years later, yeah. you're still cool with it.
Absolutely.
Now, with the modernization of technology, does that help, though, as far as, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you'd have to get in a car and go out and see a guy's round of BP. Yeah. Well, say 20 years ago. But now you can get, you know, film on this guy and be like, all right, well, you know, obviously he doesn't have the physical video tools. You know, he doesn't fit the eye mold or the book cover test, but and I can just bypass him instead of having to take that time.
It has helped immensely, but also put a bigger burden on you where, you know, on December 17th, hey, watch this guy's synergies of the application. Watch this guy's video and, you know, we need you to write a report on him. So it has created greater demands. But also one thing the Red Sox stressed, he said, listen, you need an admin day. You know, there's a player you like, you know, stay home, get some admin stuff. And, you know, you really like whoever the player is, they just finished a 3-game series at University of Florida. Just go through a synergy video and update your report on him. So it's create a lot of opportunity. There's more information, but also it's kind of created greater demands where you're essentially looking at, you know, evaluating year round.
Right. You know, yeah. You could be watching 60 videos in a day as opposed to driving all the way to Reading.
There's no shortage of work. You have to decide what work to take on.
It's work is smarter. Yeah.
You know, before I hand it over to you again, John, I want to get this off, out of my head before I forget it. You said in the last episode about how I don't know how you said it. Maybe you can correct me. How instead of looking for ways to like write a player off, you sometimes look for ways to not, you know, what they can do as opposed to what they can't do. And we talked about the hope of certain things. And I'm just sort of curious about scouting. Are there young people doing it?
More than ever. I mean, there's a lot of turnover.
Because they realize how hard the work it is, so they want to go. Then they screw it. I'll go to law school or something.
I don't know why, but there is a lot of turnover. When I first started, what is interesting, and this is just, you know, matter of factly, or does it matter? I don't know. But when I first started, every scout, you know, was a former professional player, a lot of major league players, and now there's so few that have played, and now there's a lot of those guys that, you know, I never played a day of baseball.
The econ majors.
Yeah. And so I get that's
not
fine.
Good. That's not good, though, is
I'm
it?
Not saying that's better or worse, but one thing I know is I can compare players that I'm watching to players I played with and say, yeah, I remember this guy, he could do X, Y, and Z. And tell you after, you know, going 0-4 and you know, sitting with him in the bus ride from Akron, Ohio, back to New Britain, like you learn a lot being in the dugout, in the clubhouse, in the cage, and spring training and everything. But there are a lot younger guys. And quick story, I was at a college game last year, Binghamton. And, you know, some kid came up to me, said, I'm interested in getting into scouting. And he was very nice, very nice. I could tell he was very, very intelligent. Started talking about, you know, all these metrics, and you know, talking about a player's ex woba and this and that. And I said, listen, man, that's great stuff. I said, I really respect the work that you've done and the homework and everything, but I said, that's analytics and that's a huge part of what we do. But he said, what scouting advice can you give me? And I said, well, I will absolutely, you know, this is the best scouting advice I can give you. I think what you do is great. That's a really important part of the game. That's something I'm looking to get better at, and that has huge value. But we're at University of Binghamton, and 2 miles away is the Binghamton is the Mets Double A team. Go watch a weekend series. No stats. Just go there with a roster, a pen, and a piece of paper. Evaluate those players. All right, that's scouting. When you can look at a player, go to open trial camp, and evaluate these guys. Now, obviously, use every, you know, like when I do, that's kind of my approach. But nowadays, we know these players already. But you go evaluate the tools first, but is not only absolutely imperative, but it's mandatory. You watch this player, you evaluate the tools. Now you go back and use the resources that we have. You know, see his 47 at-bats with a 2-0 count against a left-handed reliever with a low slot that throws a two-seamer. But it is literally, those are the queries that we're capable of. But it's important to use every resource, you know, that you have. But ultimately, to be able to look on the field and say what this player can
analytics
do.
Isn't scouting. That's what you're saying. It's like you're talking about being a front office analytics guy, but that's not scouting. Scouting is a hybrid. I understand you combine it, but that's what basically your advice to that kid is. What you're talking about is a front office job in analytics. You're not talking about scouting.
But they're in the scouting department. So I would say identifying, and the analytics is a great deeper dig. But also, where analytics is good is, you know, and we've got.
So are there no 28-year-old ex-player scouting now?
There's not a lot.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot. But where you can beat teams with the analytics is, you know, we can have somebody in the back room going just data mining and saying, hey, this kid's interesting. This kid's really interesting. And again, they will never tell us who to like or not like. But, you know, I got a call last year. Hey, Ray, this kid is hitting, you know, has a, you know, 40, or this pitcher has a 47% swing and miss rate on his four-seam fastball. And he's only 88 to 90. Like, this is really interesting. We need to see this guy. And that's where analytics is huge, and we can really beat people. So it absolutely has great value, but it's when you just, it's combining the two that have to work
my
in
buddy,
harmony.
My buddy, I talk to baseball a lot, Muncy, the kid in the Dodger, 20 years ago, he never would have made the majors. Because all he does is hit home runs and strike out, right?
Right.
I mean, he never would have made it out of a Double A because his average would have been .210.
Right.
I mean, like, he wouldn't have played Major League Baseball. He wouldn't have had a chance 25 years ago because he just, I don't know, is that wrong?
I think they might have found a way to make an adjustment or something. At no point is it ever wrong to say, hey, we need to find a way for you to strike out less.
Right, but in 1982, if a guy's batting .210, they would just cross off the HR stat.
It kind of depends what lineup he's in.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, look at Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
He's batting laid off. No, but 40, yeah. 50
but
home runs.
The Kyle Schwarber story would, I mean, he's a little bit different, but I mean, he might not have been able to tell the major league story. He can tell based on, you know,
But he was also a huge prospect.
He was a first round pick.
Oh, I remember.
And you would think, you know, that a first round pick would well be above a 200 hitter, right? Regardless of right, I would hope so.
But he's a physical outlier where his on base percentage, his run production value, and part of that is makes great pitch decisions. But also, it's funny. Last night at 12 midnight in the cages in Chicopee, Mass, my boys and I were talking about him, about Schwarber, and specifically what he does. There's a reason why guys. There's a physical reason why guys can do something. His bat speed is so elite, you know. But it's. If he wanted to, I'm sure it's like when I'd watch in spring training, watch Wade Boggs take BP. He could hit the ball foul pole to foul pole as hard as far as he wanted anytime. He could have made a decision. He could have hit 240 with 50 home runs, but that's a decision he makes. So
they said the same thing about Ichiro, right?
Ichiro, his BPs were unbelievable seeing him, but Schwarber is so good at getting on base. Again, we're really picking the guy that's real good, but again, part of it is what lineup you fit into. You know, I remember, you know, I played with in 91, Jeff Bagwell. I think he out hit the Eastern League by like 40 points. Like him and Matt Stairs hit four home runs. And
professional hitter, yeah. Matt Stairs.
There you go. Abs professional hitter. And he'd smoke a pack of heaters in the dugout.
You can tell, but too.
Bagwell was a really good hitter that made contact and found out on 2-0, 3-1 counts, I can cheat a little bit, get a ball out in front, maybe swing bigger. So some strikeouts came, but Hall of Fame home run career. So it's, they can all do something, but ultimately, like analytics and scouting is ideally a perfect blend.
Yeah.
And I think making the analyst guys, you know, taking them out, seeing games, helping them, seeing stuff on the field, and, you know, the quote unquote, you know, just scouting guys driving them down the road, getting really, getting a lot smarter than the analytics. It's the teams that merge the two that have the most success. Because I get tremendous respect for those guys.
Being a former player, I feel like it would give you an edge in the scouting department. Has there been an instance where, you know, you take your ability as a former player and translate that into scouting? Like, have you went out and actually sat and caught a bullpen of a high school kid or a college kid and get that different feel? It's easy to say, oh, this kid can throw 94, but you can sit behind the plate and realize the late movement on a pitch or the way it travels late, that kind of stuff. Have you done that kind of thing?
Oh, often. Often. I still like catching. I've been lucky. I've been in I was in four World Baseball Classics as bullpen catcher, but I still like doing that now. But I remember I was in Lake Worth, Florida. And, you know, a game finishes and some guy he was a release player. He was throwing against the wall. In fact, he pitched in the big leagues. He pitched in New Britain. I looked at him. He introduced himself. I said, I saw you about 3 years ago in New Britain with the Rockcats. And so I said, you want to throw? He goes, yeah, I'm trying to get a contract. So I said, all right, hang on, I'll get my gear. So my mitt in one hand holding the radar gun and I caught him. But I'll do that. I like doing that a lot. Still like catching guys because you get a perspective behind the plate just catching them, or even just, hey, do this or that, just seeing their aptitude. I think I mentioned this is why this is a very valuable time of the year where I can tell, okay, hey, I'll meet you at the batting cage. I'll throw a BP to you and I'll talk to them. Hey, why'd you not swing at that pitch, or why'd you do this? Or tell me about your swing. Like you make, you know, talk about making mechanical adjustments, talk about the actual baseball part.
Yeah.
You know, I went down to I had a workout 2 weeks ago on December 23rd in Long Island. And part of the reason I went there is one of my all-time favorite players who I missed on. I can make up a pretty good major league team of guys that I've missed. But I just had him in so many workouts. I just knew him personally so well. And he turned out to be such a great kid, and he's going to be a good big leaguer. But Logan Ohapi with the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
And he was down there. We were looking at some players. And it's just,
is he a Northeast guy?
He's from Long Island.
Really?
And
love the name.
Yeah.
And he
had a great rookie season, got hurt, and then came back.
Yeah.
Big prospect for the Angels.
He's going to be a very good player, but, you know, I spend time with as many of these pro guys as I can, you know, because I've scouted most and know most of them, but it's just, you know, just getting perspective still and just watching players, and they'll ask me some things sometimes, but.
Do you ever just sit there and watch a game on TV and be like, God, can't believe I blew it on this guy. Like, come on.
I'll go the other way. I'll say I can't believe the Red Sox didn't take him. But there are those guys. There are those guys that really, really take off. You know, like Jeremy Pena, for instance. You know,
University of Maine
from Florida. And I'll look at, I pulled up my report so many times and I've read it. And I said, and I remember telling the scouting director, man, I will die on that hill. That's what I thought he was. You know, elite, and I look at elite fielder, good, made contact at the plate. So that's got value. But I had no idea he'd be as good as he is. And I had no idea he'd go from, you know, 160 pounds to 210.
Right.
He's a beast. But, you know, there's, you miss, they're not miss guys. Like, there's nobody, you know, there's not a lot of guys in big leagues that say, I don't think he could play. I missed on him. But you miss on how good they turn out, and that happens.
Now, when you look at a player like Jeremy Pena, who burst on the scene, he came in, took big shoes, filled in for Carlos Correa, has a great postseason, goes on and wins a World Series. I think he was a World Series MVP, I believe, too.
MVP, yeah.
Right. But then his second sophomore, he struggles a little bit. Now, when you're watching him and you're sitting there saying, don't worry, this kid's going to be fine. He's got the tools. He'll figure it out. Or are you looking and saying, well, maybe this is the Jeremy Pena that we're going to see the next 10 years.
Well, looking at his value, I mean, he's always going to be able to play shortstop. And he's been able to – he makes contact. So the league will make an adjustment to you. The second year is probably always harder than the first, but – and he's got big league bloodlines.
Is he the kind of kid that can make those adjustments, though, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think so because he's got aptitude. So, again, I liked him, but I was a little light on
his
evaluation.
Who's his dad?
Geronimo Pena.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep.
We're a little tight on time. We don't want to monopolize. I do want to have you tell quickly. John brought it up off the air. Your 99 All-Star Game story. I mean, did you catch?
Great. Among the greatest days of my life. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was the day the game was announced, like in the year before. I remember talking to scouting director Ed Kenny, say, hey, you know, whoever's running, I want to be involved in it.
And this is an iconic All-Star Game because this is the Ted Williams.
Absolutely iconic. Yep. And so, you know, I was there for the whole 3 days.
Fenway Park,
you know, the day before, you know, it was the celebrity game, which is kind of cool. You know, threw BP to Matt Damon in the center field seats.
Did he hit anything good?
Yeah, he made contact. Okay. You know, I'm sure he played a lot of stick ball, but I just remember having a chest protector on and Matt Damon coming up and smacking me in the chest and saying, oh, man, I wish, what you do is so cool, man. I love to be able to do something like that. I just remember telling him, hey, Matt, just don't beat yourself up. You made a pretty good career choice.
Yeah.
But just being around those guys. So that day was the celebrity home run derby. And then that afternoon, just BP, they all took BP. And the home run derby itself was, like you said, it was iconic. I mean, that's the great Maguire.
And this is the one that you're watching on TV every year. And this is in 99, we're talking Maguire, Sosa,
Ken Griffey Jr.,
uh-huh. Best, one of the sweetest left-handed swings in baseball.
Yeah.
Now, regardless of how they panned out as far as PEDs and all that, home run hitters.
Oh, it was
right?
Fun, yeah.
And your seat for this is where?
I was catching.
Right behind, the best seat in the house.
Oh,
now, how many balls did you actually catch?
Interesting, because they're kind of keyholing a little bit because there's no time limit.
Right.
So they were waiting for perfect pitch, but there's like no words to describe it. And just last night, we noticed MLB Network's running the Home Run Derby Marathon on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I told the boys, we got to watch it because it never grows old. But it was just, that was just fun.
So I saw Mark McGwire take BP at the old San Diego Stadium, Qualcomm Park or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I told my wife, we need to get there early. It's when he was playing with the Cardinals. And I told my wife, we need to get there early. We need to see Mark McGwire take BP. And she looked at me like I was an idiot. But we went out to left field. And when we got done with BP, she looked at me. She's like, that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I can only imagine what it was like sitting 3 feet behind home plate.
It was really neat. And I saw him about 2 years ago at the area code games. His son was playing. And I went up, you know, introduced myself and talked. And like, he remembered it because we had an exchange at the plate. And he remembered it and took a picture, but it was just really cool because these guys are regular guys that love the game.
Yeah.
It was really neat.
Well, his reputation is not as the warmest guy, whereas like Griffey was sort of rock star-y and Sosa was sort of on another planet.
He's quiet. Yeah. And I think part of it is approaching these guys the right way. But I'm in uniform, I'm on the field, so it's kind of that. But, you know, that was just, there's no words. And, of course, the next day, the All-Star game. And, you know, being in the bullpen, I mean, when Ted Williams came by in the golf cart. And I knew Fox was covering, so I knew their camera angles, too. So I knew I knew where to stand during the national anthem near Pedro Sabillon. But, you know, that the game itself, just warming up everybody that got in there. And it was so cool. I just remember, you know, of course, the big scene on the field. All the players congregating around Ted Williams. and Troy Percival coming out to the bullpen right before the game, and there's just tears coming down his eyes and down his cheeks and saying, this is the coolest night ever. And it was just, you know, it was innate. It really was.
Yeah, and you were part of it.
Well, I think you touched on something like perfect there. You know, you look at these guys now, and as fans and as you watch Major League Baseball, you know, you quantify these guys based on stats and how much money they make. I mean, let's be honest here. You know, what we talk about is who's going to make $70 million, who's the next $500 million player. But these people are human beings, and they are just, they're fanboys, a lot of them. They are mm-hmm. just blessed to be there. They're probably still trying to figure out what their life is all about. And then they're looking around and they're like crying because they just saw Ted Williams. Yeah. And then we talk to you, who grew up a Red Sox fan, has worked the Red Sox for your whole life, and have these moments. And it's those parts of baseball that you probably take away that are more important than the dollar signs.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. Those are the great memories that the job has enabled me to do. You know, like I said, catching the WBC was neat. You know, I'll never forget the last, you know, I was at Team USA a couple times. Then in 2017, I was at Team USA, and the cool part was our training camp was actually at Fort Myers. So I was with them, and we went to Miami to start the games, and I'm suited up for Miami. And manager or somebody from Team Columbia comes in the locker room, and they're talking. Somebody comes over to me and goes, hey, Ray, can you help us? We need you. So I said, yeah, absolutely. So I was actually with Columbia for the 2017 BC. So I get my stuff, I go into the other clubhouse, Columbia clubhouse, and I look across, I walk in, and I see a kid. I said, man, I know you. And it's Greg Napo, who's nearby, who pitched at University of Connecticut. Had a nice 8-9 year career. I look at him, I said, what are you doing here? He goes, my mother's Colombian. What are you doing here? But we just had, you know, Jorge Alfaro was on the team, Urshela. And that was that classic game where they tied in the ninth with two outs and Jose Bautista throws out the run of the plate. But I'm in Miami Stadium. There's 57,000 people and the stadium was shaking. Like, that was the most amazing in terms of electricity environment that I'd ever been around. Like, and that's being a Fenway Park for the World Series. But that environment, just being around stuff like that.
Well, plus Latin cultures cheer in a different way. I remember being in the upper deck with the Mets when they had 25,000 to be 5,000 Latin Americans up in the top deck singing the whole freaking game.
Yeah.
Listen, you throw one more question in, then I have like four rapid fire questions, and we gotta let them go.
I was just gonna piggyback on the question that I was just asked. You know, you're with the Red Sox now. You got three or four World Series rings?
Four.
You got four World Series rings. You're with the WBC. Do you get a medal for that or whatever part of that team?
I have a bunch of cool T-shirts.
Yeah.
some neat stuff.
Just but you're, gear. I mean, uh-huh. Just being a part of something like that. I mean, when I think of 2017, that was the Adam Jones catch, right?
Yes.
Where he made that, I mean, one of probably the best catches ever as far as, you know, international
cool.
play.
And just the time and place, yeah.
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 All right. So listen, we're talking with Ray Fagnan, who's the Northeast Scouting Director for the Boston Red Sox. We didn't prep you for this, so we'll see how it goes. I just have basically four questions. Your best big name signing of your career?
I say Barnes, just in terms of longevity.
Worst.
Oh,
nothing
it's too
personal.
Many.
it's too bad.
You look back at 99.
Anyone we'd know?
No, because you would know them.
But that speaks volumes to what we talked about. How many people don't hit it, right? Yeah. How many people don't make it?
Well, you look at the first rounders, Craig Hansen, who got the big leagues fast. He could have had a really good career. I mean, he was in the big leagues 3 weeks off the draft, but he just had a strange injury. So there's those guys. And Ryan Westmoreland,
yep.
You familiar with the name?
Yeah.
Theo Epstein says to this day he's the best amateur he's ever scouted. Ryan Westmoreland was a 40-40 guy in the big leagues. He'd have been a 40-40 guy. And God bless him. He's still alive and doing well, and he's doing well. But just that horrific issue with his brain where – you know, the grace of God, he's still alive. But that, you know, that was a very, very promising career. He's an elite talent.
So I understand you don't want to necessarily out a bad signing. We might not know it, although I think fans of the podcast who are inside baseball would.
Well, you signed Carl Pavano, right?
Yes. Yeah.
No, I mean, good career. But as a Yankee fan, you sit there and he's like, he's the first guy you start to roast usually as a Yankee
he's
fan.
He's the first guy you roast.
But you didn't live up to his contract, right? But
injuries.
It's very
tough.
Easy to say that you suck. As a fan, but you don't suck because you're in Major League Baseball.
Oh, my God.
We all know that.
You ever stand next to Carl Pavano? Favorite person in baseball ever?
Rich Gadman. Unequivocally.
Why?
Rich Gadman. Bean Wister, going to Assumption. Getty had just burst into the big leagues at 20. He showed up at Assumption a couple times to work out with us. And it was really cool having a big leaguer there. Fast forward a couple years, I'm sitting on a bus with him going to a big league spring training game. And years after that, I'm watching him manage in Worcester in the independent leagues. And then he joins our organization. I've done a lot of workouts with him. I've taken my kids to go see him and hit. But he's the same guy that he was all those years ago in Worcester. Just a tough, hard-nosed kid from Worcester who's had a heck of a career in the big leagues, is in the Red Sox Hall of Fame, is still involved in baseball, still helping people. He's just a great human being. Mm. But he's unequivocally, he's the guy. He's my favorite all-timer.
I still think he could have caught that Bob Stanley pitch. But I mean, I'm not going to go there because I remember it very, very well.
Again, I saw it in the last 72 hours. Yep.
I got to ask it. You could take it where you want. Who's the worst person in baseball ever?
I know a couple behind the scenes, but I'll tell you when we're done. I'll be glad to tell you when we're done. But
Somebody who's dead and buried?
No.
Bury him further?
No, okay. But all anybody, right. I've been lucky. I've just been around great people. And specifically, I've had, I think, 9 general managers and 8 scouting directors, and every one of them has been tremendous.
So I had favorite Sox ever. You said Gedman, but after Gedman, who's your favorite Red Sox
Carlton
player?
Carlton Fisk. Hate to cut you off, but Carlton Fisk.
You're a little skewed to catchers.
Yeah. But Carl Yastrzemski, we drafted his son out of St. John's Prep.
Mike went to St.
Michael,
John's Prep?
St. John's Prep. We drafted him out of high school. And one day, I'm up in Andover, Christmas break. He'd come back from Vandy. I'm throwing BP to him. And I hear the door behind me. And I hear, hey, Ray. I turn around. Oh, my God. It's Carl Yastrzemski.
And he doesn't
he
come
knew
out
my name.
Much.
He never. He knew my name, said hi to me. He was there for about 5 swings. And he left. Hey, see you later. And he's walking out. He comes back. He goes, hey, Ray. I'm having lunch with Dwight today, and I told him I was going to come down and see. He says hi, and like I could not call everybody I knew quick enough to say, yeah, said hi to me. He says, oh, by the way, Dwight says hi. Yeah, I mean, that's not the greatest moment of my Red Sox career. I mean,
as someone who's slightly younger who grew up, that Dewey said hello is kind of a big deal. Listen, you know, we'd love to have you back. We appreciate the time. And good luck to your sons. Sounds like things are going really well in the household, too.
So 30 years now with the Red Sox organization. 32. Yeah. So are we going to see 50 with the Red Sox?
Oh, I tell you.
40?
We're going to pay tuition. Once the tuition's covered, you know, then we'll figure it out. But I guess as long as they want to have
it. Could you still jack one out of Fenway?
Yeah. Yeah, I still swing a lot.
Listen.
Again, as long as it's at 5 o'clock and they're not throwing curveballs.
We're sitting here and I'm watching Ray sit in his seat and cross his legs. I think you could probably catch at least 7 innings right now.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably my thumb would hurt, but yeah. It's having 3 boys to push me in the gym.
You know, keeps you young.
That's it. Absolutely.
Well, listen, thanks so much. And we'll be following Ray Fagnett, the Sox Northeast Regional Scout, a lifer with the Red Sox and a lifer in baseball. You've been listening to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.